Welcome to the Antisocial Podcast. This is episode 194 with reviewer, writer, and heavy metal supporter, Kit Ekman. But before we get into this week's episode, my name is Andy Dowling. I host this little podcast, and I also play bass in the Australian metal band Lord. And guess what, folks? Our brand new album, Fallen Idols, last week hit the ARIA charts, the Australian album charts for Australian artists. We hit number 20. We're a top 20 artist, and we're also number 2 in the Australian independent charts as well. So thank you to everyone who has bought the album, pre-ordered it, bought it at the shows, streamed it online, and continues to spread the word. We never expected any of this. This is absolutely incredible. So this is the most successful album that we've ever put out through all the Dungeon and Lord releases. And we are just in a fantastic position and riding some fantastic momentum. So to get that kind of recognition on a national level in this country is incredible. Now, if you want to know what all the fuss is about, you can go over to lord.net.au and check out our brand new album, Fallen Idols. You can also go to dominusrecords.com, and that will take you straight to the Dominus Records Bandcamp page, which has got access to the Lord online store, all of our side projects, including Serenity Defiled, Blackened Angel, From Beyond. This podcast is on there as well. Heaps of stuff. But it's a great way to get to our new album, Fallen Idols, doing fantastic things, and just a massive thank you. That first pressing has now officially sold out. It is gone. The second pressing has arrived, and we've started dispatching that all over the world. And it's just, we're just having an absolutely great time at the moment sharing this music with everybody. And the feedback so far has been ridiculously good. So if you want to see what all the fuss is about, hear the songs, you can find them on Apple Music, Spotify, or go to dominusrecords.com or lord.net.au. But a massive thank you to you for supporting it. In addition to being a heavy metal warrior, I also host a self-starter podcast, which is all about small business, self-employment, and freelancing. So if any of those things tick a box for you, you can go and check that out over at selfstarter.com.au. Season 2 is up and running. We're several episodes in, and season 2 will run until the end of December this year, 2019. So go and check all that out. Season 1 is still available, so you can go and listen to those first episodes of the podcast. And if you know anyone out there who is in the self-employment world or wants to start their own business or their own side hustle, earn a little bit of extra pocket money, direct them towards Self-Starter, because there's lots of great case studies, lots of stories from people from all walks of life, lots of different industries, and it's a great way to share best practices, get some insight, and even some reassurances, because it's not easy going out on your own. So lots of great insights to hopefully get you started or keep you on track. So go and check it all out, selfstarter.com.au. It's the shout out time. Every week I thank some legend who supports the podcast, and it can be in a range of different ways. It could be leaving a review somewhere on the internet. It could be Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Facebook or whatever. I don't care, on an old school bulletin board. It could be a message of encouragement. It could be a guest recommendation. It could be a beer shout via the PayPal button over at andysocial.net. It could be some merchandise via the online store, whatever it is. It all helps. It's massive. These extra things that people do, in addition to listening to the podcast, of course, which is more than enough, just means a hell of a lot to me and keeps me motivated and driven to continue to push this thing forward. And every week I thank one person, just put on public record, and it's my way of giving back and saying thanks. So this week's shout out is for Sean Blanchard. Blanchard, I think it is. You guys know me. I can't pronounce names for the life of me. Sean is from the Melbourne band Dead City Ruins. And a little while ago, he sent me a message saying, now let me quickly find it. Been listening to your podcast. Really enjoy it. Love the Brett Garsard one. What a legend. Keep up the great work. Thank you very much, Sean. You can go and check out Dead City Ruins by going to deadcityruins.com. You can search for Dead City Ruins on Facebook, and I'm sure that they are on all the other socials as well. I just noticed that they're on AFM Records in Europe as well. Well done, guys. Really, really good. But they've been around for a while. A few member changes along the way, but some legends in that band. And Sean is one of the guitarists in Dead City Ruins and just doing amazing things. So, Sean, thank you so much for making the effort to reach out to me. It means a lot. They're just simple little messages, but they keep me fueled and keep me going. So when you hear this, flick me a little message. I'm going to find some crap lying around my house, put it in a little package, and send it out to you, because we all like getting something in the mail. Why not, hey? In addition to all of this, I've got a few more shout outs. So I have a page on my website that's got all the links to all the shit I sell on the internet. If you go to andysocial.net/buy stuff, There you will find links to a whole bunch of different platforms where I sell things. So it's got links to the Dominus Records online store, which has got all of our projects, Lord, the podcast, etc. It's also got links to my eBay store as well as my Discogs store. So eBay's got an eclectic mix of a whole bunch of stuff, band stuff, music memorabilia, clothes, old unwanted gifts, sorry guys, and lots of other random crap on there. So you don't have a sticky beak there, lots of weird and wonderful things. And Discogs has about, well, I think about 1,800 odd CDs, records, cassettes, DVDs, etc., ranging from metal to rock to punk to jazz to blues to pop to whatever else I can possibly think of. There's heaps and heaps of stuff on there. Lots of stuff under $5 a pop. So if you want to clear me out of all that cheap stuff, please do so. I'll do you a good deal if you buy enough. And lots of cool collectible stuff. I've mentioned in the last few episodes that I recently went to Japan in June and brought back a whole bunch of Japanese pressed metal releases from over the years. So some really, really cool stuff. So especially if you're a bit of a collector and you love to get different versions of albums, go and check out my Discogs store and have a squiz. If you hear me crapping on about all of this and you decide to buy something from any of these platforms, please put a little message in there to say that you heard me crapping on about it in the podcast. And I'll include a few little extras in there because I like to say thank you for listening to me crap on. And, you know, it's a good little bit of market research to see if anyone's paying attention to me talk shit in these intros. So there you go. AndySocial.net/buy stuff. If you have any problems trying to get through to those links, shoot me a DM somewhere on any of those social media platforms and I will hook you up with some direct links there. A few extra little shouts, just people that have been supporting via these platforms. What have I got here? Dimitri from... oh, Kaliningrad in Russia, James from Carlton North in Victoria, Gabrielle from Brownsville in Texas, in the US, Carl from Wellington in New Zealand, and Seong from Seoul in South Korea. Thank you very much, folks, for supporting me. I think most of those guys are coming from Discogs and eBay. Really appreciate the support. It means a hell of a lot. AndySocial.net/buy stuff. Alrighty, folks, here we are. Episode 194 this week is with heavy metal supporter, metal enthusiast, writer and reviewer Kit Ekman from the US of A. And I've known Kit for quite a few years. We connected online and a few years ago we met in Atlanta, Georgia. Actually, 2 years in a row we met in Atlanta at the Prog Power USA Festival. And Kit's just an amazing guy. I'm a big fan of Kit. I'm a Kit fan. And watching him gallivant around the world and go to all these metal festivals and drinking beer, and I just think, man, how does he do it? How the hell can this guy balance this amazing lifestyle with, you know, air quotes, everyday normal life? And so I thought, well, let's get him on the podcast. Let's just ask the questions and talk metal and find out a little bit more about him. So we talk about a lot of this stuff in this chat, and if you want to get psyched up about metal, this is the interview to listen to. This is the podcast episode to listen to. Kit is oozing with passion about metal, and he's a massive contributor to heavy metal in North America, in Europe. He gets out there, supports bands, gets on the road with them at times. He's a mascot at times for American band Night Demon. He writes and reviews a lot of shows, and he just gets out there and makes the most of this amazing thing that we call heavy metal music. So we talk about a lot of that and what it means to him and where it's all come from and how he's managed to be really intentional and focused about what is really important to him. And if you want to get psyched up about it, this is a great episode to listen to because Kit is just, as I said, oozing with this passion for metal music and the entire metal lifestyle, the community, the extension of what this music is all about. So I'm going to put a bunch of links in the show notes. We talk about a number of different videos in this conversation, so I'm going to dump them into the show notes over at andysocial.net. Kit also writes for Metal Chaos magazine, so I'll put a link to that and some of the articles that he's written, and whatever else. I can't remember whatever we talked about, but I'm sure I'll dump it all in the show notes. So there you go. Enough crapping on from me, as always. Please enjoy this really, really cool chat with Kit Ekman. So one thing that I've noticed being connected with you on Facebook for quite some time now is that every time you post a photo of you drinking beer somewhere in the world, enjoying metal, it's a very similar question that keeps popping up in your comments, in your photos. It's like, how do you make the time to do this? How on earth can you get around the world and do this with everything else going on in your life? And I thought, well, I may as well just call you and ask you the question. So how the hell do you make this happen?
You know, Andy, I lived my life very intentionally, and I structured my life in a way that is in accordance with my values and what's important to me. And well, what's important to me? Music has always been incredibly important to me. And I went through a lot of years where, you know, there were great concerts and festivals happening all over the world that I wasn't going to. And there was this feeling that, oh, you know, I'm missing out and time is passing. And there are these, you know, once in a lifetime kind of events that I'm missing. And so I need to make changes in my life, professionally, personally, psychologically, really, just emotionally, to figure out a way to make it possible for me to do this. And, you know, and a very important factor to that, of course, is work. And my employment situation is such that not only do I make enough money where I'm able to do most of this travel without going completely bankrupt, but I've also got a very understanding boss who loves music probably as much as I do, doesn't like my music at all, although he's heard it. Like, to his credit, he's listened to it, he's given it a chance, and rejected it for the most part. But he understands the importance of music. And so he and I have an arrangement where, you know, when I'm home, I'm working really hard for him and I'm getting my work done and I'm taking care of business. And as long as I keep doing that, pretty much he's good with me going wherever I need to go pursue the latest musical adventure and beer drinking adventure, as the case may be.
I think it's so cool where you've got that arrangement, that agreement, and there's a mutual understanding of, you know, you're helping him, you're making sure that you're fulfilling your side of the agreement, and he's supporting you to ensure that, you know, you get to do the things that you love. But I mean, ultimately, I guess, you know, one thing that a lot of people forget is that if, you know, from a business point of view, if you've got happy employees and work colleagues, then they're going to perform really well as well. So he obviously gets it and understands for your happiness that these are the things that mean the most to you. So if he can ensure that you can do them, then you're going to come back and perform to the standard that he needs. So that's really, really cool.
Yes. And people ask the question, do you even have a job? And through the magic of Facebook, you know, I'm not posting pictures of me busting ass at my desk at 10 o'clock at night on a Tuesday night trying to get my work done so I can fly to Germany the next day. I don't do that. I don't post those pictures, but believe me, that's what it takes. And it's a sacrifice that's totally worth it. It's a trade-off that that I'm very fortunate to have. But again, it's not just luck. It's the way that I set up my life. I decided this was what's important to me. This is what I wanted to do, and I'm getting to do it. And you know, I feel very fortunate to have done that. But I also feel like it's not just a happy accident. It's happened because I made it happen.
Yeah, I mean, just from the way that you've explained it, it's been quite intentional as far as setting those things.
Yes.
I think the awareness of that self-awareness that you've kind of put out there is something that a lot of people still struggle to get to that point before they start making some really important decisions in their life. So was there something in particular that sort of made you, obviously you said that, you know, you were seeing all these festivals happening and you couldn't make it and you were missing out on all this stuff, but was there a particular moment that you can think of where you thought, right, I need to make some big decisions here. I need to change the way that I approach everything and be really intentional with my next steps.
It wasn't one thing. There wasn't one show or one band or one moment where I said, oh, I've got to start doing things differently. It was just kind of a buildup of things. You know, starting 20 years ago was the first time I went to Europe for a show, for a festival. I went to Wacken in 1998, so before it was the gigantic, you know, behemoth of a festival that it is now. And that was a life-changing experience because this was, you know, early days of the internet. And, you know, going through the 90s were a very difficult decade for our style of music. Mm. And there was this feeling that, you know, maybe it's kind of dead and maybe, you know, metal's best days are behind us. And then, you know, I went to Wacken in 98 and saw all these bands that, you know, I'd only sort of dreamed in my head what they might be like to see live, because again, there was no internet really then. You know, I'm seeing Iced Earth, I'm seeing, you know, Gamma Ray, I'm seeing Stradivarius, I'm seeing Blind Guardian, and you know, all these bands that just seemed sort of beyond the realm of comprehension that anything like that could ever happen or could ever really exist like that. And then from there, I think I just got the bug. And for a while I was, you know, flying to Europe maybe once every 2 years or something for a festival, and also trying to go to American festivals because Americans really were trying to get festivals off the ground. But a lot of those early efforts were, you know, just kind of sad and depressing because there wasn't a scene. There wasn't a way to get the word out. The promoters were trying really hard. The bands were trying really hard. But, you know, you'd fly across the country and come to some festival and there'd be, you know, 50 people there.
Yeah.
And everybody's losing their shirt and just frustrating. So as the scene started to get better in the U.S., there became, you know, more and better shows and festivals to attend. And, you know, and the allure of Europe and like the magic of Europe that these kinds of events can happen and be successful on a grand scale there. And this music is alive and well and never died there. It really struck me. And, you know, over time, that feeling just got stronger and stronger that, okay, going to Europe once every 2 years for a festival, that's not enough. Okay, I'll start going every year. Well, that's not enough. So far this year, I've been to Europe 4 times. I'm going 4 more times before the end of the year. And so, I mean, it was a gradual evolution in thinking.
It's it's incredible. I mean, that's, you know, for a lot of us. I mean, I guess it's a slightly different set of circumstances for yourself being in North America because, you know,
yes,
you're a little bit closer to Europe, but at the same time, there's a lot of similar sort of scenario or circumstances that we have in Australia where I think there's a metal scene. You know, there's metal bands, there's some bands that are doing really well, but a lot as far as the local scene have struggled over the years, and Europe has been the mecca of metal, and so it does seem like, you know, a world away. And, you know, it's something that, you know, guys here in Australia, some really sort of dedicated fans, like they'll try their best to get to Europe every year, and it's a big task to do. Not just,
yes,
I mean, financially is one thing, that's another story altogether, but, you know, just to be able to negotiate, find that time and dedicate and be really intentional to carve that out each year. And for
absolutely
you to work towards that over the years to get to a point now where you're going over to the extent that you are, it's just incredible. And it just shows, you know, that, I mean, the love that you have for the music, which is just really, really cool.
And it's the love of the music, but it's become sort of more than that over the years, Andy. Now it's the most amazing thing. I can walk into some, you know, crummy little venue in, you know, southwestern Germany, and I'm going to know people there. You know, I'm in some place in the middle of nowhere, and I'm going to know people there because it's, I mean, I'm sure you see it in Australia and you see it in your travels as well. It's the same people who pop up at show after show, at event after event, wherever you are in the world. And so I always feel like I'm among friends. And in a lot of cases, they're my best friends, my closest friends, are the friends that I have through music. So that's become a very big component of it as well.
I can definitely relate to that. I've always joked with you know, the guys in the band or friends and family that, you know, I can travel to a lot of places in the world and I've got friends everywhere now just from playing shows or attending festivals and shows and whatnot. And it's an incredible thing. It's not just about the music itself. It's everything that's attached to it. It's this community of people. And it's just amazing that you can rock up to a city on the other side of the world and put the call out and say, hey, does anyone want to come out for a drink or a meal? And you'll have people that'll respond, you know, and it's just,
absolutely,
you're not a stranger walking into these foreign lands. And it's an amazing feeling. And, you know, watching you sort of interact with people and travel all over the world and just, you know, rocking up to these festivals, I can totally relate to a lot of the experiences that you're having.
And as I've gotten older, the community part has become more important than it was. You know, because I used to be the guy who, you know, on the day of the festival, I get myself right up there to the barricade. I'm right up against the bar, right up on the rail. I got my hand on the rail, and I stay there for 12 hours, you know, to watch every single band, and I never move, and I never talk to a soul. And that was fun for its time, but I have a lot more fun now, I think, because I'm balancing the bands and seeing the people and, you know, try to strike the right balance. And both are extremely important to me now.
One thing that I've noticed from a distance is that you appear to be more than just an attendee, somebody that just goes there and it's a social event where you can meet, you know, your friends and enjoy the community aspect. It appears that you're a real contributor to it, not just because you're attending and you know, talking about your love of these bands, but it appears that you're really sort of making an effort to add value to a lot of individual bands and these festivals that you're showing up to.
That's been really important to me. You know, and I think it goes back to, you know, being alive and being a metalhead in the 90s in a time when there wasn't really a scene, and just having this feeling like, I've got to do something to contribute to this. I've got to do something to help build it up, because if I and the people around me, if we don't care enough to do that, we're going to lose all of this. And now it's very easy, and the scene's a lot bigger and a lot healthier and a lot stronger, but that feeling of sort of wanting and needing to contribute and to make a difference in some way, that's never gone away, and it's stronger than ever. And what's been fun for me over the last few years is finding a lot of different ways to contribute. And the easiest, earliest way that I contributed was I started writing these reviews. You know, I'd go to a festival somewhere, and I'd write these just incredibly detailed, encyclopedic, exhaustive accounts of what happened at the festival. And I don't know if anybody cared except me, but I thought, well, I'm going to write these, I'm going to record them as sort of like a historical record of what happened at this crappy little festival in a field in the middle of Ohio. and I'm gonna have it. And if nobody else cares, well, at least I care. And I can put it out there, and, you know, maybe someday somebody else is going to care, because this means a lot to me. And if it means a lot to me, then it should mean a lot to somebody else. So the writing part was always there for me, but over the last few years, it's become something more. I started working with particular bands, and usually it was just because these bands were my friends, and they also happened to be bands whose music I really liked, so that was a bonus. But, you know, whether that's traveling in the van with them and selling T-shirts, or helping them with their website, or more recently, you know, managing social media accounts, or, you know, in the case of one band, like going up and being their mascot on stage, like, you know, whatever it takes, I'll do it. And I have a lot of fun with that, and I get a lot of fulfillment with that. And I really do feel like I contribute in a lot of significant ways to the music that I love, the people who are my friends, and the bands that mean the most to me. So it's a great situation.
I've been on both sides of the fence, you know, for years, sort of just being primarily just a real appreciator of metal, and just, you know, being that attendee that just goes and enjoys music and just immerses themselves as that glorified fan. And then, you know, years later, starting to play music and being in a band and having that dynamic as well. And it's a really interesting thing, because I look back at sort of the years gone by and when I was first getting into metal, and you start to try and look for things that were almost like historical records of what was going on at that time. And you do find the old, you know, concert review, the old gig review, and there might be a little blog somewhere that's just sitting there and collecting digital dust, so to speak. And
exactly.
But it's really fascinating to see, just get a little bit of an insight of what was happening at the time, because there's just little nuances, there's little changes, little things that were different back then compared to what's happening now. And one thing that it's really hard being in a band, because you want people to do things that you've just mentioned. Like, you want people to go out there and just talk about metal, you know, write a review, like, mm-hmm. just put a Facebook post up and talk about your experiences, or, you know, have a little blog or whatever it might be. And you don't have to be a professional writer or journalist or anything like that. It's just get out there and just talk about it. And it's
exactly
real, it's a real hard thing, because you don't want to tell people to do something that ultimately, you know, you're asking them to take time out of their day to do something, but you kind of want to encourage people to express their appreciation of what they love, and
right.
be able to put it out there in a way that's fulfilling for them. But obviously it impacts and benefits everybody else. I mean, the more that it's documented, more that people talk about it, it's exciting, and it just benefits everybody.
And everyone has a platform now. And to the extent that people can use that platform for constructive means for the bands that they love and the shows that they enjoy and the records they enjoy, to me, that's a great thing. That's a great thing. And it helps the bands. It helps the fans. It gets people turned on to other bands, because, you know, we're awash in so much digital information now. It's overwhelming. You know, I wonder, for somebody who's a 20-year-old kid right now coming up, how do they figure out, I mean, how do they even know how to find the good bands? You know, you can go on YouTube and there's 10 million bands that all have videos on there and full albums on there. And how do they find the good stuff? And so if I can help with that in some way and say, hey, here's an experience I had. Here's this band I saw the other day that blew me away. Or here's this CD I pulled off the shelf for the first time in 20 years the other day, and it still sounds amazing, and you should check it out. And if that turns anybody out there onto it, to me, that's a win-win for everybody all the way around.
Yeah, it's. I remember first getting into heavy music and just, you know, kids at school and their older siblings. I didn't have any older brothers or sisters, but through friends, you know, we're able to get exposed to, you know, old cassettes and burnt CDs of just random songs, and you just start to get immersed in it all. But it was all recommendations of others. You know, it was a word of mouth sort of approach where you might find yourself in a situation where you may, out of your own initiative, find something that's interesting and you get into it. But a lot of it came from people that you looked up to, you respected, somebody that you had trust with. And that word of mouth approach is just so valuable. It's amazing. I mean, even for us with this album, you know, it's all been word of mouth. You know, it's been totally organic in the way that, you know, we went to our inner circle of friends and made sure that they knew about the album. And then they went out and told everybody else as well. And it's just been this chain reaction. And it's just so underrated because everybody thinks that you need, you know, you need the mainstream media to tell you what to like and what not to like. But it's not the case anymore. And it probably never has been. It's just, it's always been that your neighbor, your friend at school or your best mate. And that's been sort of the critical element.
You don't need the mainstream media. You don't even need the big metal websites to be backing you up, or the big metal magazines picking you up. And it certainly helps to get that kind of support and that kind of recognition. But if you don't, again, everybody's got a platform now. And as long as you know you can get your fan base, you know, motivated and energized about the work that you're doing and the new songs and the new albums that you're creating, and they'll take it out there, and that word of mouth will spread, and it works, and it makes a huge difference, and it gets people turned on to it. So, I mean, absolutely, I agree with you.
You mentioned before talking about all the different things that you've done to support, you know, your friends in bands, and you mentioned very quickly, and I actually wrote it down because I thought I need to talk to you about this. You mentioned the mascot, and yes. When I saw this, I thought, this is so cool. This is awesome. How... Do you want to give me a bit of backstory on this one and how you managed to become a mascot on stage with the band?
Okay, well, the band in question is Night Demon, and I have a very special relationship with those guys. I got on the Night Demon train really, really early on. I first met them in the spring of 2014 before most people knew who they were. I didn't even know who they were. I was at this little festival in Madrid, Spain, there were like six bands that were playing there, and it was almost all three-piece bands. So like Raven was playing and the Rods were playing, and I was there with my friends from North Carolina, a band called Widow. They were playing. And the first band on the bill was this band from California called Night Demon. I didn't know who they were. But I saw them play that day and thought they were fantastic. And the thing about being in Madrid, Spain is the people of Madrid are incredibly friendly and gracious and open and wonderful people, but a lot of them don't really speak English very well. So the native English speakers were just kind of standing in a little corner of the venue by ourselves, you know, because we could only talk to each other pretty much. And I ended up just striking up a conversation with those guys. And, you know, one thing led to another. And a couple months later, I saw him, you know, play in front of about five people in New Orleans, Louisiana. And the next thing I know, I'm having them over to my house for Thanksgiving dinner because they're on tour somewhere and they're in between shows. And, you know, I want them to have a nice, you know, traditional American turkey and stuffing, you know, pilgrims and Indians kind of dinner. And they weren't going to get that on the road. So I said, come to my house. I didn't think they would actually show up. And it just kind of, and the relationship just sort of built up from there. I started riding in the van with them from time to time, helping them go to shows. And a couple of years ago, it got to the point where one night they asked me, you know, they've got a song called The Chalice. And, you know, the lyrics are about, you know, drink from the chalice. It's the unholy grail. And so they've got this mascot, this hooded sort of demonic skull mask wearing robed mascot who comes out during the song, and he's got the chalice and he waves the chalice around. And sometimes the chalice has, you know, beer or wine or Jack Daniels or God knows what in it. And, you know, it's all part of the shtick, and it's great. And the mascot actually is the character that is pictured on the cover of their first EP that they did independently in like 2013. So one night they just asked me if I would do it, and I was petrified. because I'd never done anything like that before. But I thought, oh, this would be cool. So I did it, and then there was another occasion where they asked me to do it again, and then again, and now, by now I've done it a couple dozen times, and I've done it in some, you know, just some situations that meant a lot to me. Like, you know, last year at the Bang Your Head Festival in Germany, which is a big outdoor festival, there's a giant stage, there's, you know, probably 10,000 people that go to that festival, and Night Demons play in that festival, big open air festival. It's, you know, my favorite big outdoor festival in Europe. And I go out there on that stage, and I'm the mascot, and I'm holding up the chalice. And I mean, it was a moment. It was one of those things that I think about it now. It just kind of gives me goosebumps even to think about it. Like, was that really real? And, you know, thankfully there are photos and videos that confirm for me that it was real and it actually happened. But it was a really cool thing. And I've had moments like that because of that. And the funny thing with being this mascot is I feel like there are people who sort of know the way I do it, and it's different from the way others do it. So if they see a video, they kind of know when it's me versus somebody else. Because I don't go to every Night Demon show. That I couldn't do that and hold down a job. They're a hardworking band that tours and plays a lot of shows. In fact, they're playing in Germany two nights from now, and it breaks me up that I'm not going to be there. But I can't be there because I can't be gone all the time. But anyway, I've had so much fun being the mascot. The mascot's name is Rocky, and I get mail delivered to my house sometimes. It's addressed to Rocky, and so it's fun. And there are people who see me and they call me Rocky, and I'm not the only person who's done it, and I'm probably not the person who's done it best, but I've done it a whole bunch of times, and I've had a lot of fun with it, and you know. God willing, if the band wants me to keep doing it, I'll get to do it a whole lot more.
That's so cool. And I've been to Bang Your Head, and I can envision what it would be like to walk up on that stage and just, you know, get a reaction from the crowd as the band's playing the song, and just being sort of totally immersed in that moment. It would have been surreal.
It was a rush. It's something that I'll never forget about as long as I live. I will always remember that moment and the way that felt.
That's so
to be out there doing that.
And I mean, going back to what you said before, as far as when they first asked you to do it and that first time that you went on stage, had you been on stage at all for anything previously?
I'm trying to think. No, I hadn't. There were probably times that I, definitely not with them. You know, there were times that I, you know, jumped on stage with another band to like help sing the chorus of a song or something, but you know, I don't play an instrument. I'm not a musician. I have no musical talent whatsoever. So just to be on a stage while a band is playing is, you know, kind of a big deal for me, you know, much less to be like part of the show.
I just remember some of the first times I ever got on stage, you know, years and years and years ago. And just the rush, but also the nerves of just this overwhelming feeling of just the anticipation of it's about to happen, and then getting up there and just... It's almost this intoxicating feeling where you don't even know what's actually going on. You can't even be in the moment because you're just so overwhelmed with what's happening. It's such a really weird feeling. So I'm not sure if you had that, but yeah, it's definitely a big moment.
I did sort of have that, and the way I've had that is because with this particular mascot costume, you can't really see anything because I mean, yes, there's this rubber mask that you're wearing with the skull on it, but underneath that you're wearing basically a ski mask because you don't want anybody to see white skin through the eye holes. It's supposed to all be black. So I've got this black ski mask, and then it makes me blind. And then over the black ski mask, I've got the skull, so I can't see. So my biggest fear was always, you know, I'm going to walk out there and I'm going to fall off the stage because I'm not going to see where the edge of the stage is. I'm going to trip over the monitor. I'm going to trip over somebody's guitar cable. You know, there's going to be some kind of disaster where I embarrass them. And I never, ever, ever want to embarrass my friends. And I don't even care for me. It's for them. You know, and I'm part of the show and I take that seriously and I want to do it really well. But I mean, that was always the big thing with nerves. But thankfully to this point, you know, knock on wood, I haven't had any major catastrophes. The only sort of embarrassing thing that happened was, this is actually kind of a funny story. Night Demon played this 70,000 tons of metal cruise this year. And they were a last minute booking and they weren't authorized to have a crew. Well, I came along anyway, you know, bought my own ticket and said, you know, if you guys are playing it, you need some help, but I'm going to be your guy. So I'm going to be there because that's what I do. And the first time they played, every band on the ship plays twice. The first time they played, they got the pool deck stage, which is where you want to be. You know, it's definitely the best the best environment to play. It's the best ambience to play. But the bad part was they went on at 5 o'clock in the morning. The music had gone on all night, and there had been a storm earlier that day, so the stage was running behind. So they went on at 5 o'clock in the morning, and the wind was whipping because the ship was trying to make up lost time to get to port because it had tried to sail around the storm as much as it could. So the wind is blowing really, really hard. And it gets to the part where I'm supposed to come out on stage as Rocky, and I've got the costume on, I've got the hood, I've got the mask, I've got everything. And I go out there and I do the Rocky thing, and there are actually more people than you would expect who are still out there in the crowd at 5:30 in the morning. And I do it and I think, oh man, that was awesome. And it felt so great. And I come back off stage and I go hide behind the cabinets to take the costume off. And I reach up to pull back the hood. The hood was gone. The wind had blown off the hood. Pretty much right after I got out there. So the whole time I was out there, everybody was seeing, you know, bald Rocky with this shiny head. Not that I'm bald, but the rubber mask is bald on top. And it's not a very good visual. And so I'm out there trying to be creepy Rocky, and everybody thought it was hilarious. And the band got the biggest kick out of it. They thought it was absolutely hilarious. And I had no idea. I had no idea. Until I got off stage and reached up to pull the hood off.
Well, I think there's so many unusual elements that sort of make up that particular show where, you know, first of all, you're on a cruise liner, this massive ship. So that's unusual in itself. You're out in the ocean. You're playing at 5 a.m. in the morning as well, which is just ridiculous. But it's just that's the way that 70 Tons is. And then to have that visual on stage as well would have just made everything just so memorable, and no doubt people that were watching the set would have really enjoyed it just because it was just everything about it is just so unique. So it sounds like it would have been a really fun sort of moment.
And the most memorable thing about that set, hopefully it wasn't me losing my hood. For me, by far the most memorable thing was when the band started playing, it was pitch black. Now, we're outdoors. It's pitch black. It's totally dark. And about halfway through their set, they've got a song called Dawn Rider.
Oh, yeah.
And as they're playing Dawn Rider, I look up and the sky's lightning. And you start to see, you know, a little peak of the sun. And by the time they finished the set, it was full on daylight. And I took time-lapse photos from the side of the stage because I'm like, these guys have got to see that. I'm not even sure they appreciate what's going on while they're playing because they're so focused on what they're doing. I'm not sure they're looking at what the sky is doing. But the time-lapse photos, they show it from pitch black to daylight over the course of that 45 minutes. And it was magic. It's something I'll never forget.
Oh, that is so cool. That is such an awesome thing. I think, it just reminded me of, I'm sure you've seen it. There's a video from a couple of years ago where Ozzy's playing somewhere in the States, and I think it's an eclipse. And the eclipse is happening just as he's playing Bark at the Moon. And it's the most ridiculous set of circumstances. The timing is just incredible. And just, you know, watching the videos and everyone's like, oh my God, this is actually happening. And it's so, so cool. So that's an awesome moment to be able to see that with Night Demon.
I think that was set up by design, Andy. From what I remember, you know, a couple of years ago, we had this full-on solar eclipse that was happening in the middle of the day. And some promoter, it was summertime, and some promoter in the Midwest had this idea of, let's set up a stage outdoors, let's get Ozzy there, and we pick a location in the Midwest where the eclipse is going to be, where the effect is going to be the strongest, like where it goes to total blackout conditions, because in some parts of the country it didn't. Let's set up an outdoor stage, let's get Ozzy up there, and have him do a short set and have it timed so that he's doing Bark at the Moon right as it goes into black and out. And so it wasn't just a coincidence, but I've seen the footage and it's incredibly cool. And anybody who's listening who hasn't seen it needs to look it up because you've never seen anything
again.
Like that before.
Yeah. Oh, well, I didn't realize the backstory, which kind of makes it even more impressive because somebody's obviously had the light bulb moment to think, oh, this is a really good idea. How can we make it happen? And they've timed it to a T. It was just like incredible just to watch it happen. And you know, it's still incredibly impressive even to know that it was planned. But man, imagine just being there and just going like where else or when else ever would something like that ever happen? It's just like very, very cool.
One of those once in a lifetime experiences.
Oh, for sure. So, I mean, you're a massive Night Demon fan. I've I actually got into Night Demon because of you, I think, and I'm sure a lot of other people can probably agree, just from, you know, you traveling with the band and doing stuff with them, doing the mascot stuff. It's eventually gets to a point where, who are these guys? I may as well go and check them out because, you know, he's talking about them so much. And really, really awesome stuff. But, I mean, you know, for people that are listening, you know, we'll start with Night Demon in particular, but I mean, where should people start? And, you know, what's a song or an album that people should kick off their discovery of Night Demon?
Well, I love talking Night Demon. I can talk Night Demon with anybody all day long. And I got to tell you, it warms my heart that you check them out because of me. You know, I'm always trying to turn people on to good bands. And you know, Night Demon, in addition to those guys being super close friends of mine, are, you know, probably my favorite band at the moment, and have been for the last couple of years. So if that worked and my lunatic ramblings on Facebook or something in any way inspired or coerced you to you know, Google them somehow or, you know, find a song, then I say that's fantastic. And that makes me really, really happy. But for those who don't know, Night Demon are a three-piece traditional metal band from Ventura, California. And that matters because Ventura, California is also the same town that Cirith Ungol came from. So there's a lengthy heavy metal heritage that comes with this very pretty beachfront town about an hour north of Los Angeles. And they got the idea of seven years ago, to put together a band that basically paid homage to the very best of the new wave of British heavy metal. And that hadn't become a trend at that point. Other bands really weren't doing that. They were out there ahead of the curve. They didn't think anybody would care. They were just doing it for themselves. You know, they wanted to play Diamond Head covers. You know, they wanted to play Angel Witch songs. And then they started writing their own songs. They've now gotten to the point and then one thing led to another, and they worked really hard. And that's, you know, one of the distinguishing characteristics of any band that's going to have any kind of significant sustained success with this kind of music or anything is, you know, the willingness to work hard, the willingness to get out there and just be a road dog and play the shows and put in the travel and make the enormous personal sacrifices that have to be made. And they've done all that. But you also got to have the songs too, and they do. They've got the songs, they've got the performance energy. To me, they're the complete package. And the idea that a three piece could, you know, fill up a room sonically the way they do, could light up a stage with energy the way they do, is still astonishing to me. Even after all these times I've seen them. I'll be watching them play somewhere and, you know, my jaw will just drop and I'll look at them and go, my God, these guys are so good. They are just absolutely an amazing band. To this point, they have two full-length albums out. They've got the EP that I mentioned that's got the mascot on the cover. That was the first thing they did. Then the two full-length albums and a live album. So if I were trying to advise somebody of where to start, I mean, if you like traditional heavy metal that takes the best of, you know, you got some early Metallica in there. You got a lot of old Iron Maiden, like Deano era Iron Maiden in there. You've definitely got the Diamond Head kind of stuff and the Angel Witch kind of stuff. That's all in there as well. The Riot, I mean, for those who remember, you know, Riot, the way they were in the '70s, the road racing kind of stuff. They're all about that as well. It's an easy band to recommend because they play very much in that style, but they don't sound like a clone. They've got the songs, they've got the chops, they've got the singing, the guitar playing, the whole deal. And I would strongly encourage somebody who is at all interested in checking them out to go to the live album. The live album is called Live Darkness. And the second studio album was called Darkness Remains. So the idea for the live album is it's Live Darkness. Mm. And, you know, there are a lot of live albums out there that are unnecessary where, you know, they were done to fill a contract or something like that. But then there are also those live albums that you put them on and you go, these are the definitive versions of these songs. You know, like if I hear Live After Death from Iron Maiden, that's how I hear Aces High. That's how I hear The Trooper. That's how I hear Hallowed Be Thy Name. To me, those are the absolute definitive versions of those songs. Or a band like Raven with Live at the Inferno, the live versions absolutely destroy the studio versions, or Kiss, or, you know, Iced Earth. It's a short list, but there are bands whose live albums are really the best things they've ever done. And I would put the Night Demon live album in that category because it's done. The songs just, they've got that little extra step, that little extra oomph, that little extra energy to them. that you can't replicate in a studio, because there's that adrenaline that's pumping on stage while they're playing, and you got the crowd, and they played it in Cleveland, Ohio, which is, you know, their biggest stronghold of fan support in the United States. So, and I was there that night, and it was a full room, everybody going crazy, singing along with every word. And the live album really captures that. It captures that energy, and it takes sort of all those great songs that they've written and recorded, and it just raises them all up a notch in terms of quality. So that would be my recommendation. It's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but as I said, I could talk Night Demon all day long. So you give me an opening, I'm going to take it.
Oh, man, I'm glad you took it, because the word refreshing isn't the right thing to say, but it's just so nice to hear people talk so passionately about a band. I think, you know, we've been really fortunate as a band over the years to have people talk about us in a similar fashion. Mm-hmm. And it's something that you just don't take for granted. I think it's just something that's just incredibly special, because you often forget, you know, what sort of impact music can have on people and your interactions with people. And we all, like, as you said before, it's like going to Europe and, you know, seeing all these amazing bands. You know, first of all, it was you just experiencing the music and the bands, but then it became this community thing. It's a larger part of your life. And to hear you talking and describing them in that way is just, it's so cool to hear you explain it like that, because it reminds me of how important this music is. And for me, as somebody that loves listening to metal, you know, I remind myself of why I got into metal in the first place and why I've had the experiences that I've had. Like, I wouldn't be sitting where I am right now having the conversation with you if it wasn't for metal. You know, I wouldn't be playing in the band that I'm doing. I wouldn't have traveled the world. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have had all these amazing experiences if it wasn't for metal. And it's far more than the music. The music's a massive part, but it's a huge thing. So it's very, very cool. And I guess off the back of that with Night Demon, and you sort of explained it before, like meeting the guys in Madrid at that festival, but was there, I guess there's probably a number of different elements that really attracted you to the band. Obviously the music's there, but was that work ethic, that real grassroots approach that they've taken over the years, is that something that sort of really drew you to those guys? Was it something that, I can only make an assumption here, but Are they the type of band that sort of really has their inner circle of people, you know, that support them, and they make those people feel like they're part of the band?
Yes. And the work ethic absolutely resonated with me in a big way, because, you know, I'm a firm believer that life doesn't hand you things. When life does hand you things, a lot of times it's bad things. So that kind of what I was saying before, when you asked me how it is that I'm able to do all this music travel, it's because I've set up my life to make it happen. So you kind of make your own luck. Mm. And for bands, I don't want to run anybody down, but there are bands out there that have a feeling of entitlement, that, and bands at all levels, bands that never get out of their mom's garage, and bands that play arenas, that have the feeling that somehow they're owed whatever success they get, whatever money they get, whatever fan support and adulation they get, that somehow they deserve this, or the universe owes them this somehow. And that's always been a huge turnoff to me. The bands that I really love to support are the ones that have, you know, scratched and clawed and kicked and fought and been the underdogs, and, you know, gone through the blood and the sweat and the tears and the pain and the, you know, the abject poverty and the homelessness and, I mean, everything that goes with it, all in single-minded pursuit of that dream, because that dream is the most important thing. The bands that, you know, look every fan in the eye, every single person, and thank them and mean it and want to make it a special occasion for that fan and don't take that fan for granted, and are just thrilled to death that there's somebody out there who cares what they have to say, who cares about their music enough to show up and buy a concert ticket and buy a t-shirt and, you know, do a post on social media, whatever it is that they do to show support of the band. And so that was an element that absolutely drew me to the Night Demon guys right away. I mean, it started, honestly, with seeing them play that night in Madrid and seeing what a great live band they were. It was obvious that these guys had their act together. And then, you know, it built from starting to talk to them and then just starting to understand them as people and what makes them tick, and, you know, observing the way they went about their business and the way they, you know, what their battle plan was, and they definitely had a plan, but it involved working really, really hard, trying to work smart, but being willing to give up everything in order to chase the dream. And just to touch on the last thing that you said about, you know, having an inner circle of people and sort of making those people feel part of the band, they have gone so far above and beyond to make me feel that I belong and that I matter to them, and that they couldn't do what they do without me. And that I don't ask for that from anybody. I don't expect that from anybody. But for them to give me that kind of encouragement and support means so much. You know, I've been to shows with them where they've gone around introducing me to people as the fourth member, and they're half joking, but you know, but there's a lot of heart that goes into that, and there's a lot of, you know, it kind of hits me in a place where I go, yeah, what I'm doing matters, and it's important, and it means something, and I'm making a difference. So yeah, I mean, all of that goes into it for sure.
I think it's a very human element that I think we all sort of strive for, is that I think we all want to feel valued, like we're contributing to something, we're having an impact, and you know, whether it be small or big, it's a really important thing. We want to feel like we are valuable, we're doing something to make something better, a situation better, or a person better, or whatever it might be. And you know, I've certainly felt that personally, you know, when I'm doing something for somebody else, or I'm getting out there and contributing, even if it feels like I'm one in a thousand people, I'm still adding my little extra piece of assistance or yes. help or contribution towards it. And it's just it's a really powerful thing that can really just strike a chord with people in a very sort yes. of deep way. And I've tried to intentionally do that with the people that mean the most to us as far as our band and the people that support us, and just without even hesitating, just will drop everything for us and do not need to. As you said before, like when the guys say those things to you and treat you in that way, you don't expect it. You're just so happy to be a part of it. But and we have the same sort of thing, and it's just a case of we want to make sure that people understand how much of an impact they do have. It's so important to it's so cliched when you hear people say, oh, we couldn't do it without you guys, you know, and we say it quite often, but it's a literal thing. Like it's, you know, the music's there, but you know, people aren't in the studio writing the music, but they're inspiring us to have the creative flow to be able to get into the studio and write the music, you know, so they are impacting what ends up on the final album. It impacts where we end up playing. It impacts how many people show up to shows and the appreciation and all that sort of stuff. And it's just, it could be, as you said, a social media post. It could be a review. It could be coming out to the show and just showing the support and buying a t-shirt, or just being there and just appreciating it. It's just, it's such a massive thing. And I think a lot of bands, unfortunately, glaze over it. And as you said, there's certainly, I'm sure we're probably on the same page with certain bands, but I think there's quite a few out there that, It's a bit of an ego platform as well, and I think people feel mm-hmm. that once they have the title of a musician or being in a band, that they can separate themselves and detach from everybody else because they're special, they're unique. And I think the best bands out there are the ones that say, we are exactly the same as you guys. We're just metal. Yes. Metal fans, we love metal, and the only difference is that maybe for an hour out of that whole day that we'll get up on stage and have a go ourselves, and apart from that, we're out there in the crowd, we're going to be having beers and chatting about the same things that we love. So it's a really, really cool thing.
And honestly, Andy, that's one of the things that I've always admired about you guys and about you personally, is the effort that you have always made to make that connection with people. I mean, you're in Australia, and to most of us in the world, that's a long way from anywhere. And that, I'm sure, creates challenges for what you're trying to do, to develop an audience, to get that connection with people. But I've seen what you've done with that on social media, and getting people involved and getting people on board and getting people to feel like they're a part of what Lord is doing. And then I've also seen it in person from when you played at the Prog Power Festival in Atlanta, and pretty much everything you guys did at that festival was, you know, it was perfect, because it was obvious that it was from the heart. It was obvious that it was done for the right reasons. It was inclusive of everybody. And in general, the bands at Prog Power are good about that, but they, not all of them are. So it's always very heartwarming to see a band really really kind of take that approach and take it so seriously and give of themselves so much while they're there as you guys did.
I'm sure you'll be in the same page, on the same page as me. I think there's a real appreciation for the underdog. I think when somebody's not in the spotlight and needs to work extra hard to get recognized or to get anybody to glance in your direction, there's a real electrifying sort of energy around that where it's you want to get behind that person. It's like a sporting team, you know, and there might be a team that hasn't won in months, hasn't had a game won, and they're at the bottom of the ladder and they're horrible. But it's so exciting to be a part of it because you just want to be there when they eventually win. You know, when they eventually get that game, it's like you were there and you were getting behind them and you were supporting them. And for us, I mean, not that we feel like we've always been the underdog. I think we've been very, very lucky, especially here in Australia. But, you know, internationally, like a lot of bands, many bands out there, it's a real hard slog. And so when we do connect with somebody, you know, for better or for worse, we latch onto those people so hard. Like, we're like, please don't leave us. We love you. And for me personally, I mean, I won't speak on behalf of everyone, but I'm sure we're all on the same page. We've created friendships out of pretty much everybody that we've met along the way. We've made an effort to really talk to people and build connections and make it more than just the band. The band's just been a great excuse to meet people. And yes. So now going back to what we said before, I mean, you're in the same boat. You know, we go around the world and we rock up to these little towns or cities and in foreign lands and we can meet up with people and reconnect with friends, and it's all been
you've got friends.
Yeah, that's right. And it's just
you walk in the room and you've got friends because of what you've done before.
Yeah. It's such a cool thing. I mean, for Prog Power, and Prog Power is a very unique festival, and I think there's some in Europe that's sort of similar in the sense that very community-based. But Prog Power, for me, I'd never experienced anything like it. And to go the year before and just walk around and drink beers and just have a chat to people and just introduce myself and try to make some friends and have a great time and go, wow, this is incredible. Like, this exists. This is amazing. And then to go back the next year was almost like, it was a very funny thing to say, but it was almost like a homecoming because the family had been established, like that Prog Power family that everyone refers to. I was reconnecting with everybody after a year of being away on the other side of the world, and here I was, and I'm back, and I brought my friends, and we're going to play some music for you now. And it was such a surreal moment to have that curtain, you know, go across on stage and look out, and you know, the front row were all people that I'd met the previous year and built these great friendships over the past 12 months, and just to get on stage and play, it was such a, even talking about it now, it's just a real surreal feeling that it actually happened. It was really, really cool. So it's an amazing thing.
I'm sitting here with a big smile on my face to hear you describe it because I saw it happen and it was just as you described it. I mean, you weren't playing to a bunch of strangers. You were playing to friends. I mean, real friends. Because of the groundwork that you'd laid the year before by coming and just visiting and being a fan and meeting people. And that it matters. It changes the whole experience. It changes the dynamic in just fundamental ways. And I think makes it more meaningful for everybody.
It does. And even like the other guys, when they came over, they couldn't wrap their head around it. They didn't understand what was going on to a degree because it's like, how do all these people know who we are, or to the extent where they're just so personable and everyone's coming up and having that conversation, and how the hell do all these people know you, Andy? And I'm like, well, I did have a few beers last year. I did get a little bit chatty, so you know.
I saw that. Yes, I can confirm that you did.
and then you get the
layer where you're on stage and you're in a place where you've never been, to people you've never played for, and the people are singing the words to your songs. I mean, that has to be the coolest thing.
It's
like they knew your material inside and out. They knew every song that you played.
It was amazing. It was just it was like I can't even put into words apart from just the standard descriptive words. It's just a very amazing moment just to be able to do that. And you know, we've been really lucky in Australia. We get to play some great shows, and we've got a really, really loyal inner circle of friends that have supported us over the years and come out and tour, you know, travel to different shows. And but when you go overseas, you go to the other side of the world, and you have very similar experiences where these people connect with you, and it's just like, wow, like, you know, it's a very silly thing to say, but you know, this music travels, you know, it gets out there, you know, people discover it, and it's just, we're all cut from the same, you know, the same thing. And we're all, you know, we're all similar. We all share similar things. We're all human, and we tick the same way. And, it's just it's a really cool thing to be able to bring people together.
I couldn't agree more. You said it perfectly.
I'm keeping an eye on the time. And I think I could talk.
Yes.
I could talk to you for hours just about metal alone, and how passionate we are about it. But I think, and I would love to do it again at some stage down the track. But I think one of the big reasons why I wanted to talk to you was, I think a lot of people hold you in high regard. I see the way that people interact with you. I think we've, you know, just from a Facebook point of view, we've got a lot of mutual friends, etc. But you know, you're heavily involved. You're a contributor. You make a difference to a lot of bands and to a lot of people that love metal. And I might be, and you're a very modest guy as well, so I'm, you know, I know that I'll probably be making you feel a little bit awkward where I'm talking you up to this extent, but I think it's important to talk to people like you, because I think it just people need a reminder of why we got into this music in the first place, why we love it so much, why it means so much. And the songs are great. Like, you know, songs are iconic, and they stand the test of time, and it's fantastic, but it's everything else that's attached to it that's just super cool.
It really is. It really is. And, you know, if people hold me in high regard, I mean, I get embarrassed about all that, because I'm not a self-promoter in any way, shape, or form. I don't want the spotlight. I try really carefully when I'm writing, you know, because for the zine that I contribute to, this Metal Chaos magazine that I write for, and I'm, you know, do my festival reviews, and when I'm writing for the zine, or when I'm at a show, or when I'm helping Night Demon, or whatever I'm doing, if I'm posting on Facebook about it, I try really hard. It's not about me. It's not about, hey, look at me and look what I did. It's never about me. It's about the music. It's about the people. It's about the community. It's about everything that we've been talking about tonight that has nothing to do with me, that I'm just this little cog in this machine, and I'm doing what I can to try to make it better, just like we all are. And maybe I've had more opportunities to do that, and maybe in some ways I'm able to contribute more, maybe, but you know, we all have our parts to play, and I certainly don't feel any more important than anybody else. I'm just incredibly thankful, and have a lot of gratitude for all the wonderful life experiences that I've been able to have because of this music and the wonderful people that are associated with it. And, you know, I've had some personal things in life not go my way, but what's gotten me through it is through it all is the music and the community that comes with the music, and it makes me strong, and it makes me feel like, hey, I got this. I can get through it, because, you know, I've got an army of people around the world that are my friends, that are my real friends, and I got the music to keep my heart beating every day. So, you know, whatever else is going on in life, who cares? It doesn't matter, because I got the important stuff covered.
I think that is the perfect place to end this. I think that's so cool. Dude, thank you so much. And I mean, I am serious. I'd love to have more chats with you down the track. And I think any excuse to talk about metal, I'm there. So I think, and I'm definitely going to try and check a calendar over the next several months or next 12 months and see if I can find an excuse to get somewhere in the world and have a beer with you again. Cause it's long overdue, and it's just great to connect with you again and have a great conversation.
I would love nothing more than to connect with you somewhere around the world for a show and a beer, not necessarily in that order.
If you want to keep that heavy metal flowing, you can reach out to Kit via the show notes over at andysocial.net. As I mentioned earlier, Kit also writes for Metal Chaos magazine, so I'll put links to that in the show notes. The videos that we spoke about in this chat, I'm going to dump them into the show notes over at andysocial.net as well. So lots of little interesting bits and pieces. Please reach out to Kit, let him know what you thought of this episode, and definitely connect with him. I think he would be absolutely pumped to connect with more and more metal fans around the world. As you can tell from that chat, he is just one passionate dude about when it comes to metal. So very, very fun and fueled chat that just got me psyched and really pumped about why we all love metal music. So there you go. Go and check it all out over at andysocial.net and make sure you let Kit know what you thought. Few updates before we wrap it up. As I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, Fallen Idols made it into the ARIA charts. It was number 20 in the first week. So it was an absolutely amazing debut for us. The biggest result we've ever got. I don't think that's the right way of saying it, but you know what I mean. No other Dungeon or Lord release has ever had a debut like this. This is incredible. Like, we did not expect that. We weren't sort of thinking, hey, we've got a possibility of getting into the charts, you know, like, let's just like strategically work this out and how we're going to do it. We had no clue. I don't even know how somebody found out about it. Someone obviously looks at the ARIA charts all the time and flicked the link over. Tim got it passed on to us and it was just fantastic. So we're number 20 in the Australian album artist chart for our first week of Fallen Idols, and we were number 2 in the Australian independent album charts as well. So and Thy Art Is Murder took out number 1, which is no surprise there. They're freaking huge at the moment, doing amazing things. So congratulations to you guys as well. But amazing results. So we're just stoked. We're riding this wave. We're trying to keep the momentum going. And by the time this episode comes out, the following week charts will come out, and I would probably put money on it that we'll probably drop off that top 20, because I think we barely scraped into the top 20. But you know, we just, that's enough validation for us. But if you want to support us and you want us to try and sneak our way back into the charts, please refer people to Bandcamp to buy our album. The album is available in a few other places, but Bandcamp is the best place, and it's directly linked into a lot of these platforms that track album sales, especially in Australia. So please direct people there. They can buy the album digitally, or they can buy the CD. Second pressing is available now. That's being dispatched all over the world. Lots of people are getting their second pressed copies, and it's just fantastic. So if you want to support, do that. I've had a few little incentives for people. I'll keep it going for you guys that are listening. If you refer a friend to buy, digitalize, I'm living in the past, guys. If you refer a friend to buy Fallen Idols on CD from our Bandcamp page, and they mention your name in the comments, I will give you a free t-shirt. If you're in Australia, I'll give you a free t-shirt and post it to you for free. And if you live overseas, then all I would ask is that you cover the shipping, but you get a free t-shirt. So it's a great way of helping us push this album more and more and more, and getting out to more and more people around the world. The wave of momentum that we're on at the moment is just incredible. But it's also a great way of getting some free stuff. So why not? We want to reward you guys for the hard work that you put in for us and supporting us. I mean, you guys have helped us get into the charts. We wouldn't have done it without you guys. So thank you so much for all of that. So a few little incentives there. If you have an idea of how we can clear lots of stock, any distro opportunities, any sort of like exporting opportunities, we're not really doing a lot of large scale distribution. We don't want to do that for various reasons, and I can get into that at another date down the track. But any export opportunities, any places that you think the album could go, or any ideas that we can really get different groups of people involved. I was looking at the Iron Maiden fan club at one point. How do we get those guys into Lord? Because I'm sure that if they heard our album, they might actually be wanting to buy it. Who knows? Anyway, that's a thought. That popped into my head right then. I'll look into that a bit further. But anyway, any ideas to keep this whole thing moving would be amazing. But lots of opportunities to get some free stuff along the way. So thank you so much. Lord.net.au if you haven't bought the album yet. And DominusRecords.com, which will send you straight to our Bandcamp page as well. But thank you very, very much. Self-Starter is still in full swing. Season 2. It's going to be running until the end of the year. Go and check that out. I think by the time this episode comes out, episode 35 with Bitter Few, which is a craft beer bar in Sydney, is the latest episode. So you can go and check that out. And season 1 still available, so you can go and listen to all of that. And if you know anybody out there that is interested or is in the self-employment world, please direct them to any of the episodes over at selfstarter.com.au, available in all of your podcast players. So nice and easy to find. Mailing list stuff, yeah, it's not happening yet, but keep signing up to that mailing list. Like, log your deets, and eventually I'll send some stuff out. I've got lots of things in the works, more projects happening, and I'll eventually get that mailing list happening. Oh, there's a bloody tornado happening outside at the moment. Anyway, sorry, get distracted. So yeah, the mailing list will come eventually. Lots of stuff in the works, but sign up so then you can get the updates as they happen. The podcast series, the Getting Into Podcast video series, 11-part video series on YouTube and Facebook and LinkedIn. Find those videos, share them around. There's 11 two-minute videos, 11-part. Anyway, you know what I mean. 11 two-minute videos that talk about the basics when it comes to podcasting. Jeez, come on, Andy. So if you just have a small idea, just this little idea that you think, oh, maybe podcasting could be a bit of fun, look into it. Look at these videos. Just get a taste of what you may need, what you may need to think about. If you need a hand, please reach out to me directly. I'd be more than happy to help. And as I've been crapping on over the past several weeks of this podcast, it doesn't matter what you want to put out there. It could be the dumbest thing in the world, the smartest thing in the world. It could be serious. It could be fun and entertaining. It could be toilet humor. It doesn't matter. The more people out there expressing themselves, sharing their ideas, their perspectives, their opinions, whatever it might be, whether they're good or not, is fantastic. And I'm all for more people having podcasts. I reckon everyone should have a podcast. So just take that in mind. Go and check out the video. Share them around. If you know somebody who's been all talk and hasn't actually pulled their finger out to get a podcast happening, flick them the link to all those videos and they can check them out. But massive thank you for those people that have been checking them out and sharing them around. And I think that's about it. I have a new podcast series that's coming out very soon. I think I've hinted at this before in the past. Can't really talk about too much of it, as always, so I'm just going to be really vague and annoying and irritating. Like, you know those people that say, oh, big news coming soon, but can't share it. Oh, look at me. Well, I'm pretty much just doing that now, so I'm just going to end it right here. All right, folks, until next week, take care. Thank you so much for the support, as always. Ta-ta.
Larry, please.